everyone, this is Catherine O'Connell and welcome to Lawyer On Air. If you are looking for inspirational stories about women in law, then this is the podcast for you. Join me and my lawyer ladies as we enjoy a glass of wine after a hard day at work and talk about the world of women in law. I hope you will enjoy getting to know these amazing women who I am so proud to share a profession with. I'm glad you're here and I hope you enjoy the show. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode in season 3 of Lawyer On Air. I'm the host of the show, Catherine O'Connell. Today I am joined by Hiromi Shiraishi. Hiromi is Country Counsel for HP Japan in Tokyo, where she has been for nearly 3 years. Hiromi is hands-on in all the critical work for HP as their country counsel. She's responsible for advising on employment and labor-related matters, conducting training related to legal and compliance matters, reviewing and drafting various agreements, and advising on general corporate matters, such as the shita-ukeho. Shita-ukeho is subcontracting law in Japan. She's also advising on antitrust laws and consumer protection. Before she joined HP in August 2019, Hiromi worked in-house for a few other companies, including Renova Inc. and Nokia Solutions and Networks Japan. She also has a solid law firm background, having worked at Nishimura and Asahi in Japan and two law firms in the US. Hiromi also has the unique experience of working for the Japanese government in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs International Legal Affairs Bureau in Tokyo, advising other government ministries and agencies on issues concerning international treaties on IP, as well as negotiating, reviewing, and drafting IP agreements with foreign countries such as Vietnam, Switzerland, India, and Australia. Hiromi is a member of the Japan Federal Bar Association and Dainee Tokyo Bar Association, and is also admitted in the State Bar of California. Well, she was educated at Tsuda College in Tokyo and attained a BA, and then went on to do her legal qualification at the Legal Training and Research Institute of the Supreme Court of Japan. And then she did her LLM at University of Southern California Gold School of Law in Los Angeles. Hiromi is also an author. She's authored several publications such as Cloud Computing and Protection of Personal Information. And that's in chapter 3 of the publication called Legal Practices of Cloud Computing. And she also wrote the chapter called Movement to Reduce Barriers to Access to Information. And that's in another publication entitled Commentary on the Revised Copyright Act. Well, Hiromi is also a super contributor to the community, and I got absolute chills when she told me that she is volunteering by way of English tutoring for underprivileged high school students. She started volunteering for them this year in January 2022 and really enjoys it outside of her day-to-day work. She tells me also that they have more children than volunteer tutors. So she would love any listeners to this podcast to put their hands up and help out to be volunteer tutors. I will put all the details in the show notes, but the business name is Kids Door, and we'd love your support for Hiromi. Well, I'm very pleased to bring you Hiromi Shiraishi as my guest today. Hiromi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Catherine. Thank you for having me, and thank you for a nice introduction, especially touching upon this Kids Door's English Drive Online.
Yeah, we will go into that a bit later because I think that's such an important part of what you're doing in the community. So we'll talk about Kids Door. We're also going to talk about your career path, some of the influences you've had along your journey, your current role at HP. And I'd love you, if you can, give some tips and ideas for the next generation of maybe in-house counsel or lawyers who are coming up the ranks behind you. How does all that sound?
Sounds great to me.
Good. Well, we always start the podcast with an opening question, which is about how we would celebrate if we meet up in person. Because again, we're online doing this recording, but I'd love to know if you have a favorite wine bar or cafe or restaurant in Tokyo. And if we got together, what would you be choosing off the menu from that place?
Actually, I moved out from Tokyo 2 years ago after the pandemic started. And so I now live in Kanagawa. So can I take you to this area?
Sure.
I was first thinking about the, you know, a particular bar at the hotel, Ottawa no Mori Hayama. But I found that it's temporarily closed for renovation. But there are some other nice restaurants in Hayama where we can enjoy beautiful sunset over the sea and also Mount Fuji. Whoa. And yeah, one of them could be La Mare do Chaya. I don't know if you have heard of that restaurant, but it's run by Hikage Jaya, one of the renowned Japanese restaurants in Hayama.
Oh, that's lovely. I mean, I've heard about Hayama a lot. I'm not a big beach person, as in going down onto the beach in the sand, but I love seeing the sea from a restaurant or cafe. So I would really love to do that. That would be fantastic. Well, Hiromi, when you were a child, I was asked this question as well. Do you remember way back then what you wanted to be? I've told a few people I used to want to be an air hostess. We all wanted to do that when we were young. But do you remember what it was for you? Can you remember thinking about, oh, I want to be this when I'm grown up? Do you remember that?
When I was really small, I wanted to have a magical power, like, you know, magical girls in Japanese anime. As you know, that the anime is a big thing in Japan, right? But maybe many girls in my generation, they wanted to, their dreams, childhood dreams were to become housewives, but it never occurred to me. That was probably because my mother was stay home, but working at home. So I grew up seeing her working, kept working. So, and I don't quite clearly remember, but according to a friend of mine from college, I said to her that I wanted to be a lawyer when I was in middle school after watching drama or something. But I wasn't that serious. And by the time I entered into high school, I wanted to work for the United Nations, because I naively believe that the United Nations can bring peace to the world. So I chose a high school with intensive English education. And also my college major was international relations, especially international public law.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. I suppose that magical power thing is very interesting, and how perhaps you wanted to bring that to bring peace to the world at the United Nations. Maybe there's a tie in there. But I love how you talked about your mum, because in a way too, for me, you know, my mum was working at home, but she also went out and did part-time work. And so I used to see that as my role model. And it's really important that we have a mother or a mother figure or somebody in those early days who sort of can show the way. And perhaps that's also how that was very instrumental for you and showed you that you can do things as well as be a mother or a person who's looking after a family, right?
Right. And I actually didn't realize that, you know, my mother influenced me that way until recently, until when I seriously think about the diversity, importance of diversity and the role modeling. Yes. Just like you said.
Yes. And what was it that triggered that you remembered your mom being that kind of influence on you? Was there something that happened?
One of the triggers was the HP put me, or my manager kindly put me into a program called Women in Leadership Lab. That is for women employees of HP in Greater Asia region. We call it Greater Asia, which excludes China and India. And then I was put into a project group which needs to work on how to promote diversity in leadership in Greater Asia, in HP more. And during the group discussion, we were talking about how family life can influence the next generation. If the conversation in the family is like father needs to be the prime breadwinner and the mother needs to stay home, like typical, you know, traditional Asian family, then the next generation or the daughters or the girls can never get out of that traditional image of the father and the mother roles. And that discussion made me realize that thinking back, my mother has been at home, but she was also working.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because there's been actually quite a few other guests on the Lawyer On Air podcast who've told us this, that influence of their who was at home and how the family was arranged, but also others who did have that traditional display of their parents, mum at home and dad out in the office and working, that they broke through that as well, that they saw that, but they wanted to do something different. But I also think, just as you've said, that influence of who we see right there in front of us, and a mother who's working part-time or going out to work as well, is very instrumental. It certainly was for me. I remember mum going out, she would go out in the evenings for work that she needed to do, but was always there in the morning when we were going off to school, you know, and our lunches were made. And I just think how amazing it must have been to do that, right? Because hours of sleep must have been much less than what I thought, but always there, yet having gone to do something that was bringing some impact back to the family for, you know, additional income and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yes. And also my father, he is like ikumen, that we call it, like, you know, child care. What's the right way of expressing
it? Yeah, I think a father or a male in the family who helps with the child care and upbringing.
Right. And, you know, while my mother was very busy, she was a Japanese typewriter typist. So when she was really busy on weekends, my father took my brother and I to anywhere, like beaches or mountains. So,
Yeah. That's nice. So you'd go out in the car or on the train,
yes,
and go somewhere. Oh, wow. Okay. That's interesting. I think it'll be interesting too when your mum and dad listen to this podcast later and hear you talk about them, which is really great. Do you remember then you had that United Nations bit come up, but when did you start thinking about the law? Because your study at university, right, was not, your undergrad was not in law. So where did that start from for you, thinking about law?
Actually, in my college days, I came to realize that the United Nations does not have the magical power to you know, to make the world into peace. And then I joined a Japanese company, like other, you know, or many Japanese college graduates do. The main business of the company was a software development. And I kind of enjoyed working there, but along the way, I faced a few obstacles. And as I said, I never ever thought that I become a housewife, stay home. I wanted to keep working no matter what happens to my life. But these unfortunate events make me think that I probably need to be a professional than an ordinary employee or worker, because for ordinary workers, their fate is at the mercy of the company in a way. So for me, I probably wanted to be a lawyer, or that becoming a lawyer was one of my options in the back of my head.
That's great. No, it's fantastic, because I know you said you saw the drama, TV drama, but it's very interesting too that you had that in the back of your mind all the time while you were to be a professional, and that was the switch, a real big change that happened to you, quite significant in your life.
And also, I actually took the entrance exam for some colleges of faculties of law too. So it was probably always there somewhere in my head, I think.
Right. So little pieces of a puzzle, and then suddenly they all slot together. So carry on. What happened then?
Yeah. Let me touch upon these a few, you know, obstacles, because the why I decided to take the bar exam.
Thank you. I'd like you to talk about that. Yeah.
One thing was that the company opened some overseas position and they posted the requirements, right? As usual, as the company usually do. In my opinion, I met all the requirements. One of the requirements, like whether or not I passed the AKEN PREF 1 grade, that
right,
kind
the
of
English
thing.
Test, yeah.
The English test.
Yeah, right.
And so I talked to my manager that I would like to apply for these overseas position. But the manager's response was that these overseas positions are dangerous for girls. So basically, he really discouraged me for applying. And he might have thought that I may be too junior. But if that is the case, they should have written in the requirement that certain minimum service years are required or something like that. But it wasn't there. Another thing is that I hurt my neck by a car accident. And I needed to go to a clinic for rehabilitation. But all I needed was 30 minutes in the morning. So I asked my manager if I can come to the office 30 minutes later than the regular starting hours. But the manager told me that because it's not written in the work rules, and we cannot allow such special treatment until after I use up all my paid holidays. I thought it so unreasonable, but because I had no idea what kind of rights I have as an employee. So I came to think that it would be better to educate myself. Otherwise, I cannot protect myself or maybe others. So these things combined made me think that I might want to take a bar exam and become a lawyer.
And try and change the world, at least in your own way that you can. I mean, listen to that. I mean, it's not in the rules, so you can't do it. Think about that. It's not in the rules, so why can't we do it?
Yeah.
Right? Why not? If it's not in there, then it's not a rule. So there's flexibility. But it's interesting. Was that the same manager, was it?
Yes, it was the same manager. Yeah.
You never know what's going on in that manager's life and why they say that. And he might genuinely have thought it's dangerous for you, depending on where you were sent. But if you were sent to America or to England or New Zealand or Australia, it would be fine. But
it was actually New York, London, Singapore, and Hong Kong.
Okay. Well, there you go. So do you think those challenges sort of were, I don't want to say meant to happen, but in a way, things happen to us, I think, in order to change our path or to make us think differently, and really are impactful. Do you think those, what obviously moved you to think about professional work and to go and do the exams, has it still impacted you now in the way that you approach your work and the way you think about, say, HR policies when you're helping the HR team construct work policies, work rules and things like that? Does that experience from back then come back and help you now?
Yeah, definitely. Because I hate to take things as it is, or I always want to challenge status quo if it doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
we can make changes because the rules or laws can be amended, can be revised according to the development of the society or according to the needs to meet or to accommodate somebody's needs, right? So definitely these experiences impacted my way of thinking.
Yeah, okay. It's very interesting. And I think also you've had that experience because you've been on that side of the law where you were in law firms in the US and Japan and you had to stick to the rules. And obviously when you're advising clients, you have to give them the law and the rules to advise them so they can do their business well. But did that sort of change and become more flexible perhaps when you came into in-house? Are there things that you could do differently when you came into your in-house roles at the beginning compared to, say, when you're in law firms?
I believe that's exactly the point for a company to have a lawyer in-house, because it's very easy to just point out the legal consequences and just to tell the legal risks. But I believe that the value add of the in-house counsels is to understand the business better, understand the background about the where the business people are coming from, and to think about how we can make things happen as the business people or maybe HR wants to make things happen. So my way of thinking is definitely different from when I was working in a law firm.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine. And are you now using your magical powers? What do you think? Your magical powers as the country council, because you're handling so many things there. I mean, you're the go-to for everything. So how are you doing that? Are you using it by coming in really early in the process? People come to you with their general idea of something before it's even solidified. What's your magical power now in the country council role that you've got?
Yeah, like you said, it's really fantastic if everyone gets me involved in early stage, but some people do so already, but some don't, because they are still tied up with the traditional image of the legal department in Japan. Like they are just the final ticker or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But that's the traditional view. Yes.
Right. Yes. But I really want to get involved early, because that way, like I said, we can think together how we can make it happen without, you know, violating or reducing the legal risks or exposure. And so I, whenever somebody comes to me to ask questions about a new business or things like that, I always try to set up a call rather than, you know, just an exchange of emails, because that way I can understand their viewpoint better. So that's something I have been trying to do. But yeah. I don't think it's not a magical power.
Well, I mean, it still is in a way, because you, when you have the call, I'm sure you're asking different questions or in a different way than you would on email. Email just is functional and it's very important. We use it. It's great as a tool. But when you get on a call with people, it's completely different, because you can see how they're reacting to what you're saying, or you can ask an additional question, or you ask the why is that, or why do you think that? So I think you get more out of a personal call, and it really just depends. All calls are not the same. It depends on the approach that you have. So how do you help the business people come out with more of their issues, or tell you more about the problem or what they need from you from the start? Is there a way that you do that?
I try to be more visible and accessible.
Nice. How do you do that?
Yeah, one thing is that about 1.5 years ago, we started including a monthly article. There's a monthly magazine issued by HP Japan for our employees. And before that, legal has almost never included any article. So this is as a try to increase some visibility of legal, because the very first thing we wanted to do, or I wanted to do, is to let employees know that we are here to help from legal perspective. This monthly article covers wide varieties of topics. Most recent one was how to respond to certain requests from clients or partners. The one before was about the amendment to this personal information protection law.
Yes.
And also we covered things like stamp duties and also the stamping or the hanko or e-signature. We cover a wide variety of topics in this monthly article.
It might be interesting, actually, for people to hear about you as the lawyer who happens to be female and the program that you did and maybe some learnings. How many females in your company?
We have like 100
among
500.
Wouldn't they like to hear from you?
Yeah, and I have been thinking of sharing my experience in this leadership, Women in Leadership Lab experience in another way.
Yeah.
But including or writing an article may be a good idea. That didn't occur to me.
It's an article that you can start with anyway and start a conversation and then move towards how you'd really like to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it might be by recording, you know, an interview with someone in English and in Japanese. It could be anyway, just different ways. But starting with the article, I think, is a really great idea. I know from checking out your profile on LinkedIn, you do a few things like this. You know, you did a recent one on creating your personal brand. You joined Jessica Chan's course on speaking up at work. I'm getting the feeling that you really like this kind of skill building, not only your external skills that you have to do for, say, keeping up the California bar, but also these internal so-called soft skills, but I actually think hardwired skills that we need. Speaking up, raising your voice, you know, leadership, your branding. These are really interesting topics, Hiromi. Would you like to talk about those?
The Jessica Chan was, I gave a kind of seminar mainly to, I think, Australia and New Zealand, because there wasn't a seminar organized by a kind of employee resource group called WIN. WIN means Women Impact Network. That is a kind of employee resource group within HP. And the organizer of this particular seminar run by Jessica was hosted by this ANZ WIN. And I found that seminar quite interesting. And the courses you just mentioned was recommended to take in addition to this seminar. So I took these courses. And naturally, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion is a very important topic for Japan and for myself personally. And speaking up is not that easy in Japanese working environment sometimes, as you may know, especially for Japanese women, I think.
Yeah.
And personal building personal branding was something we worked on during this Women in Leadership Lab trainings. And I'm still working on it. I haven't come up with a nice one yet.
Yeah, I think it will come when something else coincides and it triggers something, perhaps. Yeah. How do we speak up at work? Did you find any really good takeaways, tips that you could share that you've started to use, perhaps, or that you think you're planning to use to speak up at work?
Yeah, I'm still working on it, but as a first step, I try to at least ask one question during a meeting, like leadership meeting, so that I at least have a chance to say something.
Right.
That way to, you know, prepare myself to express what I'm thinking more comfortable.
And do you think about the question before the program starts or the meeting starts, or do you think about it during?
If we know the agenda, I may think about the question beforehand, but usually I think about question during the meeting, depending on how the conversation goes.
Interesting. I really love that because it's my mantra as well. I will always ask a question, whether it's now going off mute and asking live or in the chat, but always finding a way to ask a question of some sort. So I usually prepare a couple beforehand, but if something comes up during the meeting or webinar, whatever it might be, I'll ask it there. But I think that's an amazing tip that you've given, because that's where it starts. If we don't at least ask one question, I remember, and it'll be Roy Ann Doy, who's hopefully going to listen to this later. She said to me, you know, what's the point in you being in a meeting if you don't ask a question? You're just taking up space. I think she calls it a pot plant in the room, right? You're just like a plot plant sitting over there in the corner of the room. So yeah, it's important. That's one point. Is there anything else that helps to help us to speak up?
Another thing could be to allow yourself to be less than perfect. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes, this is just my personal opinion, but probably because of this Japanese education system, we were told to be perfect. And we do not allow others to be less than perfect. And this is something, or someone in this leadership, women leadership lab training commented on me on my one-on-one kind of thing with another participant, that she said that I might have setting the bar for myself too high. And if you do not, you know, lower the bar, it would be really hard to say something, because I don't want to sound stupid, or I don't want somebody to think that I'm saying stupid things. So maybe the change to the mental state, or I don't know what's the best way to describe it. But perfectionism usually prevents you from speaking up or ask questions.
Oh, that's so true. And how did you feel though when you had that one-on-one feedback? Did it make you feel terrible, or did it actually make you feel some release and some ease to then go, oh, I don't have to be so perfect?
Yeah, it was an eye-opener for me. Yeah, I didn't think that way. I knew that I have perfectionist side, and sometimes it prevents me from doing something, but I didn't think that I set my own bar high because of this perfectionist side of me.
But that being told that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you realize, actually, maybe I am.
Yes. I completely agreed. And it caught me off guard in a way. So I'm still working on it. I'm still probably not allowing myself to sound stupid or asking stupid questions, but at least it's important to have this self-awareness, I think.
Self-awareness, yes. And you're more comfortable, it sounds like, little by little, by trying it, you're not as upset, or you're not as anxious, or you don't feel as bad about it if you do ask a question and it's not quite the right one, or there'll be other people in the room, most definitely, or in the Zoom, as they say these days, who also have the same question. But do you remember what it was after that feedback that you got? Maybe you set the bar too high for yourself, you need to lower it, that you were told. Do you remember what it was, the first thing or first or second things that you did after that to challenge yourself to lower the bar?
I probably shared this view with my colleague.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good thing to share it with someone. Yeah. What did that person, do you remember what that person said? It's all kamoshirenai. Yeah, maybe that's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's true. I can imagine sitting.
They may have been too polite to say that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I think is interesting that you had, I'd never really heard anyone say that they were taught, you know, that schools here in Japan teach people to be perfect and not allow others to be less than perfect. I didn't know that that was the case, that you actually get that as instruction at school.
It's not the instruction, but it's a, I think it's a hidden
instruction. Message. Yeah, hidden message. Mm. That's interesting. Really. So how about nowadays? Are you encouraging others then to also try to be, you know, live that kind of advice that you gave, or do you help others to give that advice back to them in one-on-ones when you're speaking with them?
I see perfectionist side in my team members. And I often tell him that his review result doesn't need to be perfect. More important thing is that he review, and if there's any questions or any things that he's not so sure, he can just ask me questions. That way we can have discussion and make the review result closer to perfect. So I encourage my team member to be less than perfect when doing his day-to-day job.
So important. You know, you're helping them crack perfectionism. By creating that atmosphere, by saying, it's okay, it doesn't have to be perfect when you bring it to me. I'm here to help you with it. So go so far, but then come and see me. And then with more inspiration or instruction or guidance from you, that he can go back and do a little bit more. But are you seeing the changes then in him, that the cracking of that perfectionism, blowing away the perfectionism, is starting to happen and he's developing more in that way?
I believe so. He came to ask more questions and gradually he's changing. That's something I see.
Wow. Okay. I wonder if he'd like to have, you know, a role like you in the future. And so I wonder what kind of advice you might give to someone, for example, if he asked you or anyone else around you how to get to do the job that you're doing. What would you say about that?
I would say, first, don't try to be perfect and don't expect others to be perfect. And the most important thing is that if you have questions, you should ask. Don't hesitate to ask. And also, it's important to know what you don't know. Some people really have difficult time to admit that there is something they don't know. But I think it's the first step to know what you don't know. Am I making sense?
You're making total sense. I've got, again, you're giving me shivers here. You'd want me, really, because knowing what you don't know, I think people often think, and we think of it ourselves, that we have to be perfectionists and know everything because we're lawyers. We've studied. We must know everything. It's impossible. And we should always be, I believe, lawyer learners all our life. So know what you don't know. Excellent. Really great. I love that. Thank you very much. You just, you know, you are completely making sense on what you're saying. And I hope that's very informational and useful for people who are listening. I'm going to switch gears a little bit because I really want to get to know about this giving back to the community that you're doing and give you a chance to speak about that.
Yep.
You're involved with the volunteering at Kids Door. So you could have chosen any NPO. I'm imagining they're an NPO, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could have chosen any. Why Kids Door?
That's Kids Door. And this volunteering opportunity called English Drive Online came to attention through HP Japan's involvement in a project. I think it was to build a kind of room where kids can enjoy e-sporting. And that the Kids Store was a kids store, and HP Japan cooperated to make this room for esports. The person who's leading this NPO gave a one-hour seminar for us about their activities. And this English Drive Online was one of them. And I thought that this could be something I can do without much efforts, because it's online. I don't need to go anywhere. And also because this is English, and their main purpose was to prepare these kids to take ACAN, the English Proficiency Test, and the basic English conversation. That way I started this volunteering. Another thing is that the language skill always broaden our possibilities or options in the future, especially for these kids. And I felt that way. So I wanted to do something to help broaden the options for these underprivileged kids.
What then do you need to do? You need to show up and deliver a kind of program for them online? Or is it already set that what you have to do each time? Or do you create that yourself?
They have some textbook chosen for the kids, and the kids themselves choose which chapter or which topic they want to do in a 40 minutes session. And when I read, for example, if I register for the next Monday session, then this kids store staff will match me to one or two of the students, and they will tell me, the kids store will tell me through online tool which text these students chose for the day. That way, you know, if I just look at the texts, then I can prepare myself. If the students choose Aiken, then there's always a cheat book for the teachers, right? So we don't really need to worry about what would be the right answer for Aiken.
So you've decided to do this and it's through HP, but there must be other, perhaps there are ways that people can help you also joining it. Is it restricted just to HP people?
No, not at all. It's fully open to anybody. And I'm really hoping that some of the listeners get interested in this English Drive online volunteer opportunity and try to do it. Because, you know, like Catherine, you said at the introduction, there are always more kids than the volunteer tutors. But from tutors' perspective, it's very difficult to kind of tutor two students with different level, and they sometimes choose different textbook. And from students' side, it's not ideal to need to learn things with a totally different level student because their pace and what they want to learn is different. So I'm really hoping that we can help to recruit more volunteers so that these sessions will be much closer to one-on-one each time.
I see what you mean. Yes, it's good to have two or three in a class as well, so they can sort of have a conversation together when you flip it over to them. But I'm getting your idea there with the one-to-one being ideal. I can see now that, you know, they've got different levels and different pace, and so patience must be one of the things that you have to have when you're doing this volunteer work. How else is it helping you to think about yourself, right? The other things that you need to think about yourself, or how's it impacting you? And how's it also impacting you in your daily work as well?
Students sometimes ask very funny questions that make me think sometimes outside of box. For example, one student asked me when we were discussing about, you know, how we say in English various shapes like circle, triangle. And when I said that shikaku is square, the student asked me why we don't call it four corners.
quad angle, right? I've got triangle, right. Why not triangle? Yes, yeah. Good question.
Right.
I don't know the answer to that. Back to your point before, know what you don't know. I do not know the answer to that. Maybe someone can help us. Did you find out?
No. But, you know, whenever I don't have any answer immediately, I always, you know, tell the student that this is my homework. Yes. And yeah,
If you find out, let me know. Honestly, yeah. That's interesting. Well, oh my goodness. Yeah. Well, I mean, how are you fitting all of this into your day? What's your routine like? Are you you're working from home most of the time, but do you have regular hours when you're switching on? Do you fitting in exercise, or when are you doing the volunteer work? So what does your like an average day look like for you?
I usually wake up sometime between 6 to 6:30. The very first thing I do is to check my emails on my iPhone. And then I do a little exercise like stretching.
Yes.
And have decent Japanese breakfast and start working around 8:30 to 9.
Right.
And I try to stop working around 6, and then have dinner and do some more exercise and take a bath to relax and then go to bed. Of course, you know, every day doesn't work that way. For example, when I do this English Drive online, I usually join the session starting from 7:45. So in that day, I may skip the exercise to join this English Drive online.
Interesting. Okay. And do you do anything else? I mean, sometimes you're doing your external study, so you're fitting that in as well. Or is that coming in during your day as well?
I sometimes join some seminars during the day, but most of the seminars I join after work, like from 6 to 8 or 7 to 9.
Okay, so you're fitting it in again outside of your actual work.
Yes.
What during your working day, so in your role right now as country council, what kinds of things do you love doing? What really makes you feel great that you when you do that kind of work?
One thing is, of course, I'm enjoying helping our colleagues from legal perspective. But aside from that, as I'm a member of leadership team of HP Japan, I have opportunities to get involved in promotion of diversity or to make harassment-free environment or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I enjoy getting involved in cultural aspect of the company life a lot. And in addition, I'm a member of Worldwide HP Global Legal Affairs Pro Bono and Volunteerism Committee representing Asia Pacific. And I sometimes need to solicit the donation nomination from my colleagues worldwide. And also I'm now trying to some kind of online volunteering opportunity for my Asia Pacific colleagues. That's something I also enjoy as a part of my work life.
That's great. And do you think this is something that other lawyers who might not be doing this could look into or think about? How's it helping the rest of your work when you're doing this more, you called it cultural aspects, which I really liked, because I think diversity and harassment-free environments are actually how the company displays its culture. Would you encourage other lawyers to look into that and think a bit more seriously about the volunteering and cultural side of things that lawyers can have some impact on?
Yeah, I definitely encourage, or I definitely would like more lawyers in Japan get involved in volunteering activities. It's giving back to the community or paying it forward. And unfortunately, this is my personal opinion, but the volunteering is not so active in this part of the world, especially Japan. And I really think the lawyers can contribute more if we can set some time aside from our regular work and do something to the community. So I, yeah, encourage or would like or hope the other lawyers to do something. It doesn't need to be this English Drive online, but whatever pro bono volunteering that inspires them. That would be great.
Thank you for that. I really think that's a great thing. And Hiromi, is there anything else that you would like to talk about today that we haven't talked about, or anything else that you would like to re-emphasize?
I'm talking too much about volunteering, but, HP, especially in Asia Pacific region, we are looking for some pro bono opportunities to work on. So if there's any listener who is working in a big international law firm, and if they have any pro bono opportunities, I'd like to hear these and want to think or discuss how we can cooperate.
Great. I think that's fabulous. And you're never ever talking too much about volunteering. I think it's not talked about enough. It's been a lifeblood for me. I saw it through my dad used to do it with an organization all the way through his life. And so I've seen volunteering role modeled for me, and I try to do that for others. And I think you certainly are doing that as well. And I give you credit for that. And I think you'll never say, it's great or anything. You won't be any kind of arrogance or anything about it. It's just something you want to do, and you're encouraging others to do it. And I'm with you on that, knowing that volunteering is really a wonderful way to express and have impact as a lawyer. I mean, 40 minutes a week, or however often it is, to show up and do some English teaching for kids and getting their questions back to you and having them impact you. Yes. I mean, that's magical, mm-hmm. right? There's the magical power that they're giving you, but also your magic is now coming through volunteering to work with others. I think that's really lovely, Hiromi. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we're now going to head into the final Super Six, which is the final quick fire round of six questions that I ask each guest to wind up the show. And the first is, I think I know the answer to this one before I ask it. 1 million yen, Japanese cash. If I was to give that to you, where would you spend it? Favorite store, destination, or volunteer organization?
Yeah. I definitely want to make some donations to these NPOs, including Kids Store.
Yes.
Yeah. But I might also want to spend a little bit of it to my online shopping for fresh produces and some other goodies, which before the pandemic, I really enjoyed eating around and finding new restaurants in Tokyo, but because I don't do it anymore. And instead, I started buying, fruits, veggies, and stuff like that online. Mm. And yeah, I actually completed buying from all 47 prefectures in Japan in the past 2 years.
Really? That's super. What a great idea.
Yeah.
So in some way, you've supported each prefecture, somebody, a producer in those areas. Wow, I love that.
That's what I thought.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. I might try that. That sounds fantastic. Wow, good on you. And how about a book that you've read or are reading, or maybe if you're a podcast listener, a podcast you've listened to or that you would recommend?
Yeah, I'm a podcast listener since 2016, when one of my colleagues took me to this podcast world. And I think one of the previous guests also mentioned, but the Hidden Brain is one of my favorite.
Yeah. I think I've heard of that. Yep.
Yeah. And I also enjoy listening to Planet Money, because I'm very bad at math and economics, but this Planet Money gives me a very good sense of what's going on in the economy side.
Yeah. I see. Yeah. Great. Thank you for that. How about a favorite saying, like a kotowaza?
Yeah. This is not really a saying, but HP kind of renewed their mission statement and stuff like that last year. And there's a statement called a belief, which is one thoughtful idea has the power to change the world. This really resonate with me, and I really love this belief.
Yeah, because a thoughtful idea is a careful or considered or a respectful idea, and I certainly think that would definitely change the world right now.
Right.
Yeah, wow. Okay. A famous person or celebrity you would love to meet or have already met?
I would have loved to meet Mother Teresa if she was still alive. I know that there's some controversy or criticism about her activities, but I really want to know her perspective of helping people.
I wonder if there's anything written by her or about her that someone did a biography. I'm sure there must be
Yeah,
something,
there must be
autobiography.
something. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, thank you. And what about something about you that people don't know? We know you're a volunteer, a massive volunteer.
Yes.
What is there? What else is in there that we don't know about you? I certainly may not know about you.
I was once on the cover page of Los Angeles Times, not
Hmm.
by myself, but together with my classmates at the University of Southern California Law School's LLM program, because we were in the inaugural class. So the LA Times decided to feature us. And I was quoted as saying, "It's so embarrassing to speak English in front of so many native speakers." It was 20 years ago. So you can tell, for me, I'm now speaking to a wider
You
audience. So
sure are.
what a big change.
What a
And
big change.
yes.
I hope you've got that article, at least even photocopied, sitting inside a frame, a photo frame. Have you?
I have the copy
Yeah.
because someone in my law firm kept it for me.
That's great. I mean, having something like that that you have on, your bathroom mirror or, on the door as you go outside, somewhere that reminds you, that's who I used to be. And now I'm the one that shows up on a podcast and I'm the one that speaks my voice. I think it's always great to have that reminder of who you were and what you said 20 years ago. That's amazing. Wow, that's great. You're on the front page of the LA Times. Love it. All right. Well, if you weren't going to be a lawyer, Hiromi, what would you be?
I would say psychologist or linguist.
Ooh,
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
Nice. That's really great. There's always a
Yeah.
chance from now, right? And one last bonus question is something that you are really deeply grateful for right now.
I'm deeply grateful for people around me. Because without, my colleagues, my peers, I'm not where I am here today. I'm so grateful to people who believed in me and supported me and encouraged me.
People around you.
Yeah, people around me.
Love it. Oh, what a note to finish up on. Thank you so much, Hiromi, for being a bold and courageous person to come on the Lawyer On Air podcast. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you. I really do thank you for taking the time to share your wonderful story, your insights, and advice for other lawyers who want to be in-house counsel in the future. You've really shared with us your inspirational story of your career progression. And, we didn't go through it chronologically today. We went through in themes. And I hope everyone's noticed how we did that today. A little bit different. And that's Hiromi's input to this episode to make it more about themes that she is interested in. And I love the way that we did this. So, how can people get hold of you, Hiromi? Can they do that through LinkedIn? Or where is the good place to get hold of you to contact you?
LinkedIn's the best way to connect with me.
Great.
You can
So,
contact me directly to
thank you.
LinkedIn.
Thanks. We'll pop that in the show notes. And so, anyone interested in connecting and learning more about you and your volunteering activities can reach out to you. Yeah?
Yes.
Great. All right. Well, we'll finish it up there. And again, thank you so much for coming on and being a super guest on season 3 of Lawyer On Air. And to my listeners, please do like this episode, subscribe, and drop us a short review because that does help this episode and the rest of the episodes be seen and heard by more people. Tell us what you liked. Leave us a voicemail on my website or drop us a review. as I just said, and that would really be helpful for us going forward. And do share this episode with someone you think would like to listen to it, who's interested in volunteering, or who wants to hear about the wonderful, extraordinaire, lawyer extraordinaire life that you've just heard from Head On Me. Thanks for that, everybody, and we'll see you on the next episode. Cheers, kampai, and bye for now. Thank you so much for listening today to this episode of Lawyer On Air. I really hope that you were inspired by the story you heard and that you discovered something new about women in the law. It's my passion to share my stories of amazing legal ladies, so please subscribe to the show so that you don't miss future episodes. And if you can think of even just one person to share this episode with, that would make my day. I would love to connect with you, so jump on over to LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter or Insta, where you can find me. The links are in the show notes below. Well, that's all from me today, and I look forward to seeing you right here on the next episode of Lawyer On Air. Cheers, kampai, and bye for now.